is Locked On Jazz for the 3rd of March, coming to you live from, well, live, podcast live, from New York City after the Jazz get a win against the Cleveland Cavaliers. If we play the worst defensive teams in the league, we're going to be okay. We'll look at what the Jazz did yesterday to dismantle the Cavaliers, try to figure out whether or not we think any of this really fixes what's going on, as well as take a little look at what the Knicks did to the Rockets last night in a rather impressive performance. Ron and I watched that one on the plane. It's all coming up, plus a Time Machine Tuesday. It is Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making it way more fun to be a Jazz fan. Sorry, that little click there was me putting on a sweatshirt. It got cold in my room right when I started. I realized I was freezing. We are here in New York after the Jazz got their win last night. Solid. You know, just did exactly what they're supposed to do. Came out, great ball movement early, got wide open looks. Didn't hit them to start. Royce hit a few, but everybody else was missing. And you kind of knew as the night went on that the Jazz would be able to take advantage of it and get the shots they wanted. And, in fact, they did. We'll dig into that. The Jazz last night had their second-best offensive game of the season. The night before against Washington, we had our eighth-best offensive night of the season. Our best offensive night all year was against the Knicks, who we play next. So, you know, when we have played not very good defensive teams, and the last two games we've played are 28th and 30th, that's when our strength comes to fruition, and we blow them out. You know, we've had our best offensive game against the Knicks. We had our second best offensive game last night. We had our third best offensive game against the Warriors. I have to find our fourth best, but our fourth best was against Minnesota on the 12th of December. Our fifth best was against the Sacramento Kings on the 18th of January. Our sixth best was somewhat recently. It was December 26th against Portland. And our seventh best was against Washington, who ranks 30th in defense. And our eighth best was against Washington, who ranks 30th. So when we play, ninth, by the way, was against the Pelicans, and 10th was just recently against the Mavericks. When we play a not very good team, our offense is super potent. We get into our systems. We run what we're supposed to do. We execute it beautifully, and we hammer those teams. And that's exactly what we did last night. We're the number one open three-point shooting team in the league. We're the number one catch-and-shoot three-point shooting team in the league, and particularly on a team that Cleveland's defense was just horrendous last night. Cleveland's defense was pulling over from the weak side, which allowed for wide-open corner threes. That's one thing if, in fact, while you're pulling over, you're taking away Rudy Gobert, and they didn't do that. That's really the statement of how, you know, when your defensive strategy gives something up, that's fine. Like last night, we'll talk about the Knicks-Rockets game. And they did that. The Knicks had a strategy, which I think is interesting, and we'll talk about it. So the strategy of the Cavaliers last night was to not allow Rudy Gobert to get to the rim on the rolls, and they allowed Rudy Gobert to get to the rim on the rolls. So that's when you're not good. So they're awful, and the Jazz took full advantage of it, and they dealt with the spread decently. So let's actually stay with the offensive numbers for a second. So teams that shoot wide open threes, so 6 feet or more on wide open threes, the Utah Jazz are number one in the NBA. We're about 12th in attempts at 17 a game. And we shoot 42.7% on wide open threes. The Pelicans are second at 41. The Raptors are third at 40. The Nuggets at 40. Miami at 40. Boston at 40. Washington, Portland are all the teams that shoot 40. The most wide open threes in a game are Milwaukee. They're getting 22. Houston's getting 20. Dallas is getting 19, as is Toronto and Minnesota, and then we're getting 17. Last night we got 21 open three looks, which is just an insane number. That's what Milwaukee averages, highest in the league. And we went 10 of 21. So we got a ton of open looks, and we made our shots. The open looks are because Cleveland's terrible. We are also the number one catch-and-shoot three-point shooting team in the league. We shoot 42% on catch-and-shoot. Miami's next at 39.5, then New Orleans at 39, Washington 39. Very similar teams. But we're considerable. We're 2 percentage points better than anyone else in the league, so we're considerably better than anyone on catch-and-shoot threes. It's what makes us who we are. The thing is, we don't get a lot of them. We take the fifth fewest of anyone in the league. We only take 21 a game. The most in the league is Minnesota, who takes 28. They shoot a very low percentage, so they're just willing to take a three that's contested. In fact, Minnesota is last in the league in catch-and-shoot threes and takes the most. It's an interesting math question of whether that's actually worth it or not. At 28%, the Warriors take like one of the fewest and shoot the worst, and that's an interesting math question too, because they probably actually should just take more. So somewhere in that range is probably the sweet spot. The Jazz take 21 a night. They usually make 9. They're at about 42%. Last night on catch and shoot threes, we went 16 of 30. 16 of 30. Now, some of it had to do with where we were getting those shots. There was just a tremendous amount of corner threes, and we're good at that. That would probably be the next one I could look up for you, whether or not we're the best corner three shooting team in the league also. But last night, we ended up taking 21 corner three attempts. I mean, Cleveland is miserably terrible. No offense to Antonio Lang, my good friend who's on that coaching staff. I'm sure it has to do with the players. But I don't really know what your game plan is when you allow 28 shots at the rim, 22 or 20, and you allow 21 corner three attempts. That's laughable. Well, that's exactly what I'm doing. And the Jazz took total advantage of it last night and just absolutely riddled them. So I honestly don't know what I think of, you know. Hey, actually, here's what I do think. Like, offensively, we are still good enough that when we need to, we can go 100% beat someone offensively. Okay? Like, that's what last night shows. Is that, and the last few games, that offensively we are a powerhouse. We're the number one offense in the league since Clarkson took over or joined us on the 20th. And we showed it the last few nights. We take a lot of corner threes. We average taking about 10 corner threes a game. We make 42 from the right corner. We make 42% from the left corner. The league doesn't break it up for me. And whether that's, it looks to me, the Rockets is always take 11, and I think we're next in the league. It looks like maybe Detroit might take about the same as what we do. We're about second in the league in taking corner threes. So, you know, that's how our offense is built, to go get those shots. And then if you're not very good, we don't. We went 6 of 12 from the right corner last night and 5 of 10 from the left corner. It's a crazy number. So they actually have us with 22 corner threes open. Cleaning the Glass has us with 21 because they stop and don't count blowout time. So that or they had us, yeah, with 21. That's the difference between those two numbers right there. So we rolled. We just completely 100% totally rolled on the offensive side. The defense, we'll talk about it. I can't figure out what I think. So I'll share with you my thoughts, and then we've also got a Time Machine Tuesday coming up. We'll also look at that Knicks-Rockets game a little bit that took place. The Hyundai lineup of cars is really incredible. The Palisade, which I have right now, I loved it. I was driving it back and forth to Snow Basin for 3 straight days. Just loved it. Comfortable. Totally happy if I had hit snow. Long drive, you know, it was probably 3 hours in the car each day with it. Absolutely fabulous. And then the other night, I put it on cruise control, and it has the staying in the lanes and self-drive. It basically drove me home. It made the curve off I-15 onto I-80 without, I'm supposed to have my hand on the wheel the whole time. I really didn't. It just makes the curve for it. It's so close to just a self-driving car. It's amazing. It adds such a piece to the drive, too. You put it on cruise control, set your speed. It monitors the car in front of you, and then it stays in the lane for you. It's like, great. Brakes for you when it needs to. Super. It's symbolic of just kind of representative, maybe more than symbolic, of all of the things the Hyundai's doing. The Palisade's fabulous. In fact, on Sunday it was great because my daughter was training, and then or maybe it was Saturday, was great. My daughter had ski training, so I ran to the mountain, skied for a little while, then ran over, picked her up, had all of our ski stuff, all of our golf stuff, and then we went down to Glendale and played our opening nine of the year, and the Palisade was big enough to be able to handle all of that. So the Palisade's just fabulous. I'm loving having that car right now from Hyundai. They also have the Santa Fe and the Tucson in the SUV lineup, and then the little Kona is zippy and fun. The new Sonata is just terrific. That's the car lineup at the Hyundai. Stop by in Linden, also in Logan, and at 4646 South State Street. And if you're going to stop by, email me first at dlock09@gmail.com. That's dlock09@gmail.com so that we can get you set up with a VIP experience at Murdoch Hyundai. So defensively last night, the Jazz statistically were not good. The final number on last night's performance was a 119. It's our 51st-ranked defensive performance. It just continues this terrible trend since the Houston game of the fact that when Houston went small on the 27th, that our defensive rating since that day is a 115.6, and prior to that was a 104.3. It fits, you know, all the same narratives of everything we've looked at. Our defensive performance, if I give you all those offensive ranks, right? So I think I've done this with you before, but it's really stunning. If you look at the Houston game, it was our 42nd worst defensive game of the year. Then we had our 59th. Then we had our 38th. Then we had our 58th worst, which is against Portland, which is still holding out there. Then we had our 19th against, so that's Denver. We've had one that we had a performance in our top half, right? So if you're wondering, and I'm not giving you one piece of information you need here, the Jazz record at this point of the season is 38-22. So we've played 60 games. We have 22 left. So anything that I say here under 30 is in our better half of defensive games, and anything over 30 is in our worst half of defensive games. So again, Houston 43rd, then 42nd, then San Antonio 59th, then Denver 38th, then Portland 58th, then Denver 19th. Okay, so there's one in our top half. Portland 43rd, Houston 40th, Dallas 52nd, Miami 17th, there's two, 39th, 49th against Houston, 60th against Phoenix, our worst defensive night of the year, 56th against Boston, 44th against Washington, and 51st against Cleveland. So since the Houston game, 13 games ago, we still only have 11 of our 13 performances or 11 of our 14 performances, excuse me, 12 of our 14 performances are all in the bottom half of our defensive performances of the year. And frankly, it's actually worse than that. All but three of them are in our bottom third. And last night was too. Cleveland's offensive rating by the end of the night was a 119. Now, with that said, the defensive rating at the end of the first half was a 104, which would have classified, and then it was just so easy to score all night that we just kind of stopped playing defense because we didn't need to. And I would say I think that that's what we've done, is that's the biggest kind of quantum change to who we are as a team. We now play defense when we have to. When it's necessary, we will play defense. But it is not our natural inclination to dig down deep and defend and beat somebody up. And I don't think, I felt like a year ago we got pleasure out of it. Now I think we get pleasure out of moving the basketball, having a 16 of 30 catch and shoot game and a 10 of 21 open look game. And I think that's fine. That's just, we're a different team. And so our natural instinct is not to defend. The question is on, you know, what happens? Do we have the defense in it if we're having a bad shooting night, and can we turn it on? Our transition defense was not good again last night. And I thought our headiness was not very good last night. Mike Conley made a terrible play where he goes and tries to get a loose ball where he's the guy who's got to be back defensively, and it ends up leading to a fast break the other way. My memory is that George had one too. Oh, George saved it under his own basket that started a fast break for the other way. Those plays, you can't be perfect for 100 possessions on each side, but those plays are a little unnerving, at least in the sense that you're wondering whether or not all the focus is where it needs to be and whether or not the guys have, you know, are dialed in the way you should be. The defense, it wasn't good. I probably would have preferred last night that we had a bad offensive night and we clicked in defensively and we showed the ability to get deep and great defensively again, and we didn't. I'm not going to go crazy or upset about it, but I would say that one thing I talked about yesterday was the lineups, and how curious I am to watch our second unit and whether that can be something. It was not something last night. Tony Bradley on the floor. The lineup I'm so interested in is the Mike Conley lineup with Joe Ingles, Jordan Clarkson, George Niang, and Tony Bradley. Now, again, what it did so well is it played the end of the first and then the end of the second and started off the second and played really well. But Mike, the Jazz have had three chances to use it. They didn't get to use it because Donovan Mitchell got in foul trouble and screwed up all of our rotations. Well, Mike Conley got in foul trouble last night. He got in foul trouble 4-16 into the game and went out of the game, so the Jazz never used it in the first half. They then used it in the second quarter, and it was a mess. It was -9 in the 3.5-4 minutes it was on the floor together. It was on the floor for 5 minutes and 18 seconds, and it was -9, which was too bad because that's the lineup I was most excited to see. It just didn't come together in that stretch. I'm not entirely sure. You know, Mike, frankly, sat for a long time, might have been a little bit out of sequence. Clarkson might have been pushing a little bit because he was back at home. And then George missed three threes, had a foul and a turnover in that stretch. So, you know, if George makes some of those shots, it changes. That same lineup did get in for a few minutes, but not many, for about 1 minute and 6 seconds in the third quarter. And they were -3, and then Quinn took George out, I think, for defensive purposes to close the quarter. They then came back and played the opening part of the fourth quarter, which Mike Conley, Joe Ingles, Jordan Clarkson, George Niang, and Tony Bradley, they were +4 in that stretch. And, you know, maybe the biggest difference is George Niang made both shots that time instead of missing off. I mean, George is an offense. Tony had some nice plays in that stretch, also. And then Joe just was not shooting last night. He finally did late in the game. But he did not look like he was shooting. The other thing the Jazz are doing that's somewhat interesting here is they are playing Rudy Gobert, Donovan Mitchell, Bojan Bogdanovic, and Royce O'Neal for a lot of minutes together. So they opened the game playing just those four, played 7 minutes together to open the game. They were +2 in that stretch. Then they came back and played again, Gobert, Mitchell, Bogdanovic, and O'Neal. So you're kind of interplaying whether it's Joe or Mike with the rest of it. But that four-man lineup played an extended stretch together to close the second quarter and were +9. They then opened the second half together. They were even. And then they kind of came back in and to close out the ball game, but they actually were -5. They didn't straighten it out a little bit until Joe and Mike came back in the ball game. So it's an interesting, they're playing that grouping a lot together. That grouping has generally been pretty good this year. So we'll keep an eye on that. I do want to touch on the Knicks and then Time Machine Tuesday for you. I told you when I first introduced you to SpaVia that SpaVia was the, like, if you went up into the mountains and went to one of the Ritz or the St. Regis and you want this incredible spa day, well, they're like $300 for a spa service. So what Spa Via was, what we were talking about was like, well, Spa Via is like having that same experience, giving yourself that pleasure, getting your escape from the world, also make yourself feel better. And it's for half the price, but that's actually not true. What it actually is like half the price of half the price of half the price. It's like crazy. So here's what we've got for you over at Spa Via, 104 South State Street. Donette and her crew do a wonderful job. In fact, I'm going to head down there when we get back from this trip and have a service with Donette. $109 service for $54. So, like, if you go to the Montage of the St. Regis and want the most decadent thing, it's probably like $250, $300. So it's half price of that is, like, less than $109 is less than half price of that. And then we're going to give you half price of that. It's so incredible. $89 massage for $44.50. These are amazing deals at Spa Via. In fact, if 104 South State Street's not that close to you, it's totally worth the drive. And go do, you know, stop by Shields afterwards or something. Free ad. And treat the wife, treat the girlfriend, treat the friend, treat yourself to Spa Via. 104 South State Street. $109 services for $54.50. And an $89 massage for $44.50. Tell them, obviously, you got to tell them you're with Locked On Jazz. So give them a call over at Spa Via, 801-424-7566. 801-424-7566. I actually think I said that it's 102 South State Street. Did I say 104? It's 102 South State Street, right next to the Orange Theory there. Get off on the 106 South, turn left on State, and it's there. 102 South State Street, Spa Via, 801-424-7566. 801-424-7566. Say hi to Donette and the crew over at Spa Via. Knicks last night beat the Rockets. Ron and I watched the game on the plane last night on our flight over. Always a pleasure to listen to Mike Preet and Walt. And the Knicks had a pretty good shooting night. They hit 40% of their threes. They went 12-3. They did some interesting things. Like, for us trying to watch and see whether or not there's somebody out there that's going to be able to slow down the Rockets. They ran a lot of cutters offensively, and they overloaded the side of the floor that Westbrook and Harden were coming from on the drive, and basically then tried to deal with the rotations coming out of it to stop three-point shots. And the Rockets shot it okay, but not badly. They did give up, like, they didn't deny threes. The Rockets got 56 threes. They went 20 of 56 from three. I'm not sure this is totally the sustainable model to slow down the Rockets. The Rockets' offensive rating was a 116. The Knicks, on the other hand, had a pretty good shooting night. They hit 40% of their threes, 49% of their shots overall. Wayne Ellington went crazy for a while, went 5 of 8 from three. And the Knicks won it 125-123 last night. So it's, you know, it's worth keeping an eye on. I don't know that, I mean, it did seem to bother the Knicks, the Rockets, a tiny bit, I would say. But again, we're looking at the Rockets taking 56 of their 94 shots from three, so they're probably happy with that. They hit their season average at 36%. But the biggest thing that the Knicks decided to do was to take away the rim. They just committed to taking away the rim on the Rockets last night. So that's, you know, let's keep an eye on it. We're trying to see if anybody can figure out how to play the Rockets, and that looked like the best effort anyone's made so far. All right, it is Time Machine Tuesday. I brought my little bag, and let's enter and grab. And it looks like we have 1994. So that's pre-NBA Finals. Let's go see what we got. March 3rd of 1994. I'm hosting a talk show in Salt Lake City at this point. The Jazz this year would go 53-29. This is a Michael Jordan-less year, I think. And we would lose to the Rockets in the Western Conference Finals. Ugh. What a bummer. We lost game one in Houston 100-88. Olajuwon had 31. We lost game two 104-99. Olajuwon had 41. That's the killer game right there. Look back at that one. We got close game throughout. We lost 104-99. Malone had 32, 7-7. Stockton had 18-10. Jeff Hornacek went 3 for 8. Felton Spencer, 3 for 6. David Benoit played 16 minutes, was 3 of 6. We went 3 of 11 from 3, while the Rockets took 19 threes, so they doubled our 3 output. And that's probably what was a large part of that one. Elijah won 41 points, 13 rebounds, 6 assists, a steal, and 3 blocks. He was great. Vernon Maxwell had 3 threes. Chris Gent had 2. Robert Horry had 1. Vernon Maxwell had, or Kenny Smith had 1. Robert Horry had not a lot of 3-point shooting, even though Lodge won. So we lost that game. This is like not really Time Machine Tuesday. I'm going back in that. We won game 3, 95-86, and then the killer, I remember this, was game 4, May 29th. And the reason I remember this is I used to give my dad a trip to an NBA playoff game every year, so he came out for this on his birthday. In a barn burner, the Jazz lose the game 4, which would have tied the series, 80-78. And I want the old school basketball. No, you do not. 80-78. Offensive ratings were at like 93. There were 83 possessions in this game. We play 100 possessions now. There was 83 possessions in this game. What a miserable game. The Rockets shot 43% effective field goal percentage. We shot 39.9. Malone was 9 of 23. He had 25 points, 14 rebounds. John Stockton was 6 of 12. He had 6 rebounds, 6 assists, 17 points. So our stars came to play. Felton went 0 for 5. Hornacek went 6 of 13. Benoit 5 of 11. Our bench was a combined 2 of 10. Jerry Sloan played Malone 41, Spencer 43, Hornacek 39, Stockton 37, Benoit 32, and Humphreys 31. We basically played a 6-man rotation. Tom Chambers played 8 minutes. Tyrone Corbin played 5. We tightened that rotation up. Olajuwon played 46 of the 48 minutes. He did not have a great game. He went 6 of 18. He had 16 points. Kenny Smith had 25. Rockets went 5 of 13 from 3. We went 3 of 10. And then the series was kind of over. We went and lost 94-93 on the final game in Houston. That was a heartbreaking. That was our chance. Like, that was our title right there. We were the number one. I think we might have been the number one seed. We only won 53 that game, but it seems like that's early. No, we were the number 5 seed. They were the number 2 seed. They had home court, right? That was our chance. That's our bummer. That's our one where we look back, I think, and have to go, ugh. No, Michael. The world was open for us, and we did not get that game. All right, let's go look at what we did earlier that year. We were on fire at this point. By March 2nd, we beat San Antonio. That was yesterday. So today's March 3rd. This one yesterday. We won our 7th straight with a 106-96 win over the Spurs. This was a huge game. The Jazz 39-19. The Spurs 40-17. We got a great balanced effort to beat the Spurs in San Antonio, 106-96. Again, the pace of play, 85 possessions. Oh, my gosh. Malone had 24 points. Jeff Hornacek came off the bench with 23. Jay Humphrey started that night for us. Malone played 46 of 48 minutes. Stockton had 16. Benoit 15. Jay Humphreys had 14 points and 7 assists. Felton Spencer played 31 minutes, got 2 shots, 2 rebounds. Hornacek played 30. Jazz went 4 of 8 from 3 that night. The Spurs, who were loaded, they started Vinny Del Negro, Dale Ellis, Willie Anderson, Dennis Rodman, and David Robinson. Lloyd Daniels, Sleepy Floyd on that team. 32 for David Robinson. He actually hit a 3 in that game. 32 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks. Wow, he was great. Rodman had 13 points. Vinny Del Negro had 13 assists in that game. And the Jazz would beat the Spurs in San Antonio for a signature win after being down 10 at the end of 1. They outscored them 38-24 in the fourth quarter. 2 days later, which would be tomorrow, 3 days later, the Jazz would come back home. No, they'd stay on the road with 2 days off and beat the 8-50 Dallas Mavericks. 8-50, another 89 pace play a game. 34 for the mailman. By the way, I always love like when guys talk about like, in our year, there were never terrible teams like this. Yeah, right. Dallas was 8-50. 34 for the mailman as the Jazz cruised. He still played 40 minutes that night. Jazz went at 103-90. who were the 8-50 Dallas Mavericks. They had a guy named Doug Smith, who I don't know, Lorenzo Williams, Fat Lever, Jamal Mashburn, and Jimmy Jackson, with a bench of Popeye Jones, Tony Campbell, Tim Legler, Donald Hodge, Lucius Harris, and Greg Dreiling. 8-50. Wow. Tom Chambers came off the bench for 12 that night. John Crotty, Sean Green, and Walter Bond all got to play in garbage minutes for the Jazz. That is your Time Machine Tuesday. That is Locked On Jazz today. Have a wonderful day. Let's see. Today is a Tuesday for you. They did the coaches rank on Hollinger and Duncan. I haven't heard it yet to hear what they did. So that one's out there for you. Tell your smart device to play podcast Hollinger and Duncan, the NBA show. Have a great day.